when I first picked up the book, I went, oh, another book about the science of immortality and there'll be cryogenics. And that's not what it's about.
No. That turns up at the end a little bit. What it does is, by looking at the actual lives and beliefs and activities of two groups of seekers, let's call them, at the end of the 19th century and the start of the 20th century, the first in Edwardian, late Victorian Edwardian England, and the second in the early Soviet Union, is to look at the way in which then, and I would say now as well, although in different ways, people turned to science for a kind of meaning in the world and in human life, which science itself had in the form of Darwinism seemed to rule out. So they turned to science, if you like, for an exit from the apparently humanly meaningless world that science had revealed. And that, I think, is in a way the central paradox of the book. Practically none of the people who are discussed in either of these groups was conventionally religious. They may have been religious early in their lives, but have given it up. They wanted scientific proof of the possibility, either in the case of the Edwardian psycho researchers who form the first of these two groups, that death didn't occur at all for human beings, that in fact when human beings died, their minds or their personalities or some crucial part of themselves passed on to a different world, an afterlife. So in fact death was an illusion. Or in the case of the Russians, and it's seemingly opposite, but in fact served the same impulse approach. The Russian god builders, as they were called, a section of the Bolshevik intellectuals, didn't include Lenin, but a powerful section included people like Gorky, for example, wanted to show that although human beings had in the past died the way other animals had died, and that's, in other words, they died forever, vanished and disappeared and would eventually become extinct, that was the central message of Darwinism, I think, for the Victorians and the Edwardians, as for the Russians. The Edwardians had responded by trying to show by scientific methods that humans do not, in fact, disappear completely. Their personalities or minds survive bodily death. The Russians wanted to show that death could be taken by force, could be conquered by force, that even though it was true, they accepted that up to that point, when humans had died, they turned to dust like other animals and disappeared. Science could, through cryonic suspension or through even more radical ideas of separating the human mind from the human body and becoming immortal as a just pure mental energy, intellectual energy, science could create immortality where it had not existed before. Whereas the Edwardians and the psycho researchers thought that science could demonstrate that immortality was already a fact. That's the difference between the two. So they're almost opposite in that respect, but in using science, in wanting to use science, if you like, against itself, in wanting to use science as a weapon to establish immortality, and by establishing immortality to show that, as it were, human lives go on, human meaning is not suddenly cut off by bereavement or accident or death or war or crime, etc., but it goes on in another world. They really form part of the same movement of ideas, or the same modern quest, which is to find through science what had been in the past found through myth and religion, namely a meaning in the world, meaning in human life. If science could deliver, in this case not exactly immortality, it's, let's call it indefinite longevity, create enormous, I mean, it would make population difficulties that we now have, child's play, because if people sort of, if there was no fixed point of death, just went on and on and on, potentially live centuries, the world would fill up a lot quicker, even than if we were issues of the children that were born, so either issues of incredible intergenerational fairness and justice, even though there are now, of course, but they would be multiplied by time, and all kinds of ethical dilemmas. But actually, what I, in the book, the issue I focus on the most is, especially in respect of Kurzweil, is that if it did become something like proved to be possible, what would survive would not be the persons that we'd been, because what he sort of proposes and his supporters propose is a kind of uploading of our conscious minds. In other words, of that part of ourselves which, not our bodies, because we'd have new virtual bodies in the afterlife. In fact, we could have different genders. We have dozens of bodies, change our bodies whenever we wanted. But we wouldn't have the bodies we'd have. All we'd have would be our conscious minds. And my objection to that, first of all, that's only a sliver of ourselves. And also an awful lot of human creativity comes from the parts of our minds which are not conscious. We'd lose that, just as we lose our bodies. And that would go. I mean, because you can't program into a computer that which you cannot, don't yourself know about. I mean, it might be the source of your creativity. It might be the source of much in your life that is very valuable. But you can't, it's not computable because you don't understand it. And I think an awful lot of human creativity is like, but what you'd have is a kind of sliver of consciousness, a kind of cartoon version of yourself in which you've got the conscious information that can be sort of computed, and you throw that. Whether it could be conscious, let's assume it just could be conscious. Let's assume it could be in a virtual environment. Let's just assume that. I mean, again, it's not impossible. There are strange things now, as I don't know if you've ever been. What do they call these three-dimensional things? They can float in space, holograms.
Yeah.
I've been to, they're an incredible thing. So I don't rule it out as a possibility. It could be possible. It could even be that you're floating between them in your as a conscious mind and so on. But what would that mind be? It wouldn't be you. So paradoxically, these people think of themselves as humanists or transhumanists, or they're tremendously keen on human ambitions and human hopes and so on. What I say in the book, and I do think this quite strongly, is it sort of amounts to a type of human extinction earlier than that which nature has in store for us. You bring it about ourselves.
The book is The Immortalization Commission, Science and the Strange Quest to Cheat Death. I've been speaking with the author, John Gray, and The Immortalization Commission is published by Doubleday Canada.